This edition of the Swim Brief is sponsored by Pro Swim Workouts. One of the most frequent requests I hear is people looking for workout inspiration. Head coaches can sign up for a membership for their whole coaching staff and start sharing that inspiration right away. Right now, enter the coupon code CRDESANTIS, that's CRDESANTIS, all in caps, for 20% off when purchasing a premium subscription, and you will support Chris DeSantis Coaching with your purchase. The Swim Brief is also brought to you by Chris DeSantis Coaching. Do you want to get back into swimming, but don't feel like you have the time? I know I've been there. Do you feel like it's not going to be worth it because of the grind you're going to have to go through to get back to reasonable shape? Go to chrisdcoach.com, that's C-H-R-I-S-D as in downtown coach.com, and write me via the contact form. I can help you get back in the water right now with workouts personalized to your own level so you can start moving forward right away in as little as 3 times a week for 30 to 40 minutes. And if you're more interested in hearing about how to do some of this stuff, you can also listen to a previous podcast I had with the Screaming Viking, aka Sean Klosterman, who the title of that podcast is 30-Minute Workouts and Ribeye Steaks. This week, I am joined by Nico Messer of Pro Swim Workouts, and it's another three-person pod, this time with Alexis Keto. Keto is the head coach of New Trier Swim Club, and she has a really varied experience in swimming and a lot of opinions that she isn't afraid to share. She was kind enough to join us from her sectional meet in between sessions and answer some of my uncomfortable questions. Let's roll. Hello, Alexis, and hello, Nico.
Hi.
Hey, Chris.
A pleasure, as always, to have you, Nico, and a pleasure to be doing our second three-person podcast with Alexis. This is somebody that until like 10 minutes ago, I had only interacted with on Facebook, but I loved every second of it. So now I'm really excited, and I purposely have only educated myself about the bare outlines of UR so I can be perfectly curious during this next phase, because I think from what I understand, you've coached a lot of different parts of the swimming world. You've been a college coach, is that correct?
And yep.
So tell us a little bit about where you are right now, what you're doing in coaching, and then let's go back to the beginning and talk about how you got started.
Sure, no problem. Right now, I'm currently the head coach and CEO at New Trier Swim Club. We're located on the North Shore of Chicago. We're about 450-person team. We run out of 5 sites. And we have kids ranging from Olympic trial athletes to our very, very beginner programs.
And where were you coaching before that?
Before that, I coached for 12 years in Colorado at a small team called Colorado Athletic Club. And we were a smaller program, but generally produced national level qualifiers. And also performed well at the age group and state level.
And you said, and I've read otherwise, that you were involved in college coaching as well.
Prior to that, I coached at NC State for 5 years. And then I also had a little interlude with the Y during that time, the Y programming, and some summer league swimming. If you've never been to Tuesday Night Fights in Raleigh, North Carolina, I strongly recommend you hit one of those meets up. They're really fun. Got to do some of that. And then I was also the student assistant at Northwestern University.
Okay. Wow. So
I've done a little bit of everything.
So student assistant. So coming to New Trier, that's sort of like a little bit of a homecoming for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's definitely an area. That's what brought me back. I loved my time at Northwestern. I love the North Shore community. And I love the kids. I actually did student teaching in college at New Trier. So I really feel at home here.
And you said you did student teaching. You know, was there a moment where two paths diverged in a wood, and you had to decide whether you were going to do one thing coach swimming?
Jimmy Tierney, and I love him. He's one of my favorite coaches and a great mentor of mine. He will kill me for saying this, but I went to college to swim. I was not exactly best student. Yep. But I loved Northwestern, and I loved the environment and the academic environment. And I definitely got a phenomenal education there and was very fortunate. But I switched majors probably 4 times. And there was a moment in there where I was teaching. There was a moment where I was an art major. There was a moment where I'm pretty sure we just sat down and said, what degree do you have so you can graduate? and then I looked at going to law school, actually, was what I ended up with wanting to do, before I went and coached at NC State.
All right. So you've been at a lot of different types of places. You know, there is a tendency out there for people to sort of get on a track. They got on a college coaching track and they're following that track, or they get, you know, they start sort of working their way through a club swimming track. And that's one of the things I found interesting about you, that you've sort of tried a lot of different things. What makes you want to be a club coach so much?
I love the way that you're able to influence kids' lives, and the way that when I look back at my own career, I've been very fortunate to have a lot of different coaches that have influenced who I am and what I've chosen to do. And honestly, I just look for the job that fits me best. It has nothing to do whether it's club or college. I'm sorry. I love both aspects. I loved coaching college. I absolutely did. I loved the recruiting trail. I can't explain it. But at the same time, I absolutely love club coaching. I love the environment and the community that you create for kids and the friendships that they have that last beyond just their time with you. And I think that that's important. That's something I treasure from my club swimming days. And I feel fortunate that I can create that kind of environment for my athletes.
And tell me a little bit more about this first year at New Trier. Obviously, there was a club you knew something about from your time in college. So, what was like what you expected it to be, and what surprised you? What kind of stuff jumped out at you here in the first year?
Well, I love the community that it's in. Like I said, I think club coaching is all about community, and we have a great relationship with the high schools in the area. We work really well with the high school coaches, both at Loyola Academy and New Trier High School, and as well as Deerfield High School. We have some swimmers from there as well. And it's all about kind of creating this family environment and this feeling of community on the North Shore. And that was really honestly the first thing that appealed to me. And I knew about that coming into it. And the amount of pride that swimming has in this community. The coolest thing that I think is that there's always been a rich tradition of swimming on the North Shore of Chicago. Kind of falls under the radar, I think, from time to time. But like this year, our boys team is celebrating the 100th anniversary of their competition between New Trier High School and Evanston Township High School.
Incredible.
And when you think about that, that's actually kind of amazing. Now, granted, we have some older facilities that need a little updating and things like that. But like walking into Winnetka, our pool, our campus at Winnetka, that pool is one of the first 8-lane, 25-yard pools in the country. And it was created for 8 lanes so that they could run girls and guys at the same time and run a curtain down the middle so that they could practice at the same time. I'm not even kidding. And it's just cool that you have that kind of history and respect for swimming in the community. The number of times my kids will walk around the airport wearing New Trier Swim Club stuff, and someone stops them and says, hey, my daughter, my sister, my uncle, my father swam at New Trier, is amazing. And you don't have that in a lot of places where that's something that is a community supported organization. And that's super special. And then Loyola Academy provides this phenomenal athletic and academic experience for kids that maybe need a little bit different learning environment. And having those two our two of our campuses are like they're like a mile apart. And that's awesome for them to work together to create this great experience for our kids.
Yeah. One of the questions that jumps out to me as you describe that, you talk about that 8-lane, 25-yard pool with the curtain. Mm-hmm. I mean, how far, so there's a 100-year history of New Trier and Evanston, but how far back does girls' high school swimming go in Illinois?
Girls goes fairly far back. It actually kind of started with synchronized swimming. Okay. In Illinois, and that's kind of where it began. There's a lot of women that I have interacted with in the master's community up here that got their start through synchro, and that's where they started and branched into that. But there's actually a pretty rich history starting, you know, 1920s. They started having, you know, swim team practices, and then it grew into an actual program where they competed in the mid-40s. So wow. it's a long program, and that's something that not a lot of communities can boast.
Yeah, that's really incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Nico, you have any questions for Lexis before we get into the meat?
No, I'm amazed by just listening to it. You know, it's I've been trying to get her in pro swim workouts for more than a year, and I don't know where I heard her name first, but it was still when she was up in Colorado, and what got me back then and still does it now when I'm listening to all this, it's just, no matter where she is right now, where she was in the past, like there's something around her, the buzz around her team, like people want to be part of it. She's building something that inspires me, that wants me to find out more, that really wanted me to have her in pro swim workouts and see people what she does. And I'm happy to say now she is.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
Even better, she's sharing stuff with us on this podcast. So
yeah.
I'll bet it absolutely couldn't get any better.
Exactly.
Yeah, and if I could just pile on the Alexis butt kissing before we get into one of the things that I talked about. I've only interacted with her online, but I think that I get the sense that Alexis, that you have a certain authenticity without. You know, you have a way of delivering what can sometimes be a tough message to other people, but in a way that like doesn't provoke a defensive response. Go ahead. Sorry.
I appreciate that. I don't think everybody would necessarily always say that, but I appreciate that.
So. Here's the meat of this podcast, and I want to, we talked about this a little bit before you got on, and I start to get self-conscious even as we get into this topic because you know, part of me goes like I would like to talk about it, but I hate the part where it's like, well, let's bring on Alexis Keto, women's swim coach, to talk about women in coaching. And that's why I wanted to start by talking a little bit about sort of non-gender specific stuff with your coaching. But at the same time, I recognize that this is a really important topic that is under-discussed. There's, in my opinion, obviously, a huge disparity, especially as you get to the higher levels of coaching in men and women. And as somebody who myself who loves swimming, I can't help but feel like we're missing a huge opportunity to be the best that we could be as a sport if we're sort of only selecting from one gender talent pool, not only, but mostly selecting from one gender talent pool for the top coaches.
Sure. Well, this is something that I've talked with Nico about before, and then obviously you and I have traded a couple comments online. And I think it kind of goes two ways. And I think this is where I kind of am not necessarily the most popular female coach among female coaches, because I think at some level, it's up to us to flat out coach better.
Mm.
I think that's a lot of it. I think when you get the job, when you get the opportunity, it's important to coach as well as you can. and to do as well as you can. And you will be in situations as a female coach or as any coach where it's going to be difficult, especially at the college level, because you're working with administrations. There's a lot of levels and a lot of layers. And I think sometimes we jump to the gun in analyzing how a female coach might be doing in a certain setting, because we don't know all the administrative layers that they might have to deal with at a particular school, especially ones with higher academic standards. Because you're limited in terms of who you can bring in. You know, they say, oh, somebody didn't recruit this top talent. Well, that person might not have been able to get into the school. And we're not saying the same thing about a male coach that's doing that. And we've got to kind of make sure that when we're talking about that dialogue, just asking the question, if this person was male, would I ask the same question? Would I make the same critique? Is the first step. You know, and that's from the outside. When you're a female coach in that role, making sure you're doing everything you can to learn about the sport and to create create relationships. I don't just rely on female coaches for feedback. You know, I talk with female coaches. I talk with male coaches. I will talk with basketball coaches. I'll talk with our strength coach. Like, I don't think that there's a limit of places that I can ask and that I can say, I don't know, but let me find out. And I think that young female coaches especially are nervous about that.
Yeah.
And creating, and that's partially what's holding us back. Because I don't think I know a single 24-year-old coach that won't go and talk to, like a male coach who won't go and talk to, feel perfectly fine going and talking to the top coaches in the country. Whereas I definitely feel intimidated. And it's something that I have to, and I'm someone who will talk to anybody. And it's just a matter of kind of taking that first step. And that's on the females. That's not on dudes.
I might push back on that. I mean, don't you think that we could make a lot of progress in this if sort of the mostly guys at the top sort of recognized that there was this disparity and made an effort to break through communication-wise? Or is that just not the way of the world? I mean, I mean,
I think there's some element of that. I absolutely agree. Like, I think it would be nice, you know, but at the same time, like, you just got to talk to people. Like, at some level, like, not being afraid to reach out and create those connections and create those bonds. Like, when you are an assistant, if your goal is to be a head college coach, then you need to be an assistant college coach. You need to create those relationships with your AD, not being scared to go in and talk to your AD. That was one of the best things I did when I was at NC State, because I got the AD at the time was Lee Fowler. And I went in and I would talk to him and have conversations and ask him about things, you know, just in terms of administration, how things worked. I would talk with Nora Lynn Finch, who is our senior women's administrator, or SWA, and have those conversations. And I don't think a lot of women are comfortable doing that. And I think that's hard. And realizing that you can have that audience and that they'll talk to you. They will. I mean, no offense to your gender, but if I ask you a question, you're going to tell me pretty much everything I want to know and more if I just ask, because you're going to want to tell me, and you're going to want to tell me about how you do good things and how you do great things.
Right.
You know, and how I can do things better. And not realizing that that's a critique on me, it's a way to help me get better. Learning to take criticism is hard. I'm not good at it. I'll be the first to admit that. But learning to take it, digest it, and it's taken me 20 years to figure out how to do that. So
you've had a few defensive moments in your past. I praised you for not making other people defensive, but you've had a few defensive moments.
Oh, that was more than a few. I'm sure the coaches that I coached with at NC State would tell you that I was probably in their face more than on their side. And that's something I had to learn how to do better. Cause I don't think I did a good job there. I think I needed to learn and grow and be patient with myself instead of trying to prove myself, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's a really good lesson for all young coaches. I was having a very similar conversation with somebody yesterday, just saying like, you know, what do I feel different coaching wise? I'm 33 years old now. So I'm not I'm not old enough to call myself wise and not young enough to call myself young, somewhere in the middle. But, you know, definitely I can feel a difference from 23 years old when, gosh, it was just like, I must prove myself and I must not show weakness and I must be the best at everything. I must know everything. Like,
absolutely. Well, I think women feel that longer into their career than men do.
Yeah.
And I think, and that's mostly because I think this is where you kind of talk about the older coaches, recognizing that your female coaches maybe don't know everything and figuring out a way to have a conversation with them. Because I think we do as a gender in coaching feel defensive about like having to prove ourselves to be equal with the male coaches that we work with. And, you know, being able to voice, hey, I need to get paid the same. I had to have that conversation. And that was hard. I found out that because, you know, state salaries are all public.
Yeah.
Right. So I found out that that one of the coaches on staff was making more than me despite the same background. And I had to go in and talk with the AD and the senior women's administrator to ask for an equal pay. And it happened immediately. It wasn't an issue. It wasn't a big deal. It was immediately rectified. But it took me walking in the door and having that conversation and being responsible for myself. And that's hard. That's hard to do. And it's hard to do when you feel like you might get in trouble for it. But at the same time, you got to still do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wrote a blog post about this earlier this year about.
Yes, I saw that. I had many strong feelings about that that I did not post.
You want to share any of them now?
Well, I felt you were right on. I think that there is a major discrepancy on the female coaching side. But at the same time, a lot of those jobs that you highlighted with the ACC, there are people that have more experience that are paid more that are male coaches. Versus female coaches, you know, that have more experience. At the same time, there's plenty of women coaches in that have just as much experience that aren't getting paid the same. And so that's something that it's hard to realize that it's an issue until somebody brings it to light. So I was glad that you wrote it, and I definitely reached out to a couple of people that I know and said, "Hey, did you see this? That's pretty true." but it's on the women to walk in the door and ask sometimes and to be responsible for that and not feel like if I saw this, that this person makes more than me, like I don't have the right to walk in the door. You do have the right to walk in the door. You're not asking to get paid more. You're getting asked to get paid the same.
Yeah.
And that's fair. And it's legal. So you should do that.
Yeah.
But I think that's absolutely right. And I think that there's, you know, I mean, you look at, it makes you wonder, like in a situation down in the SEC where those coaches are paid a lot of money to coach down there.
Yes.
If there was a female coach in that setting, would they get paid the same? And I don't know the answer to that. And that would be something that the administration would have to answer to. But I feel like if you've got somebody with a similar background, that you would, or I'd hope so. And then I would also hope that coach that's applying for the job would do research and know ahead of time when you're making those salary demands. Because I also think that women as a whole tend to undervalue their coaching ability and what they're worth.
Yeah, that was one of the things I felt most conflicted about writing that. I was like, how much do I want to, like, I had a moment where I said, should I not write this? Because are people going to be embarrassed? And am I going to be sort of like embarrassing people? And I don't want any of these people to feel ashamed that they're not, you know, not getting paid fairly, or there's this discrepancy here or there, and because that just sort of makes the problem worse. But I was convinced through several private conversations that no, it's better to know. I think in general, actually, we probably could help a lot of coaches just by having more public conversations about what people are getting paid.
That's a whole other topic, but I would agree with that 100 times over. I think that we undervalue our profession on many levels.
Yeah.
But that's beside the point. I think it does. I think it brings to light, you know, is how much value is that $50,000 associate swim coach versus the $150,000 sixth assistant on the basketball team?
Right.
You know, But you know, that's
a different, yes, that's a different argument with athletic directors.
So absolutely.
So let me, I'm going to throw a few questions at you that are, a lot of them are stuff that I get feedback when I write about topics like this. And Nico has been good enough to actually prepare them as questions. You know, like these are pretty frequent responses that I for sure get on this topic, and I'm interested to see how you would respond to them. So one of them is like people go, "Well, there's nothing special about sexism in swimming. You know, swimming just reflects society. It's the same." What do you think about that?
I think that's true to an extent, but I think that any coach that gets into the coaching community, and I think this goes to any coaching community, it's not limited just to swim coaching.
Mm.
You need to understand it's a good old boys club.
Yeah.
And whether or not you agree by the rules or whether or not you agree with the way it works, that's the way it works. Yeah. And I was fortunate enough, my dad was a coach. My grandfather was a coach. And so when I became a coach, I had a lot of familial support for my job. And that's great. But not everybody gets that. And so it's difficult for everybody in this sport. And it's harder for women because I think at the core of things, we tend to want more. In terms of, we want to be able to have kids. We want to be able to get married. We want to be able to, you know, have a social life. We want to be able to have friends. We're inherently more social. And I think sometimes the impression of sexism, and this is where I kind of make people angry sometimes, I think the impression of sexism is more relation to the fact that we don't feel as social in the sport. And I think that the sport, swimming especially, a lot of the friendships and meet and organizations are developed outside of the pool environment. And many women are not willing to partake in that side of the environment. And so it comes off as sexist. But I have found that if I go and I decide to go have dinner with coaches afterwards, after a meet, for example, and we sit and chat around, that's where I can create meets. That's where I can create opportunities for my team and for my kids and create those relationships. And I don't know that, and I had to basically not invite myself, but to some extent invite myself. And so, and just show up, like the coaches' socials. You go to the coaches' socials at meets. It's mostly guys.
Yeah.
Most of the female coaches don't go. And if they go, they don't stay very long, or they don't talk very long, or they don't talk with anybody but each other. And you've got to do that piece. You've got to learn. I mean, it's something as simple as learning to play golf so that you can go and play golf. You know, I had a great couple times at the college coaches swimming association meeting because I knew how to play golf. Not well. Nobody knows how to play well. I don't think that's a swimmer, but I could go and enjoy 18 holes on a sunny day and talk swimming for 4 hours. And that's where you create those relationships. And I don't know if every female coach is willing to do that or wants to do that. And if they don't, that's fine, but you're going to miss out on some stuff.
Yeah, I guess as I'm listening to you, I start thinking that this is kind of one of the areas where I try to appeal to men because I do feel that they're, you know,
just invite.
Well, yes, but also that by changing, you know, some of the reasons you're saying that women keep themselves out. Are things that if we were able to change about coaching swimming, it would be a better profession for men to be in too, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, I'm married. I have a daughter. I'm the primary caregiver for my kid. My wife has works a lot, and we made a conscious decision that, you know, she was really going to go after it career wise. And I want to stay in coaching, and maybe this is why sometimes I latch onto this topic, because it's a bit, it feels a bit personal to me. But do you think that, do you think that swim coaching as a profession can move towards a sort of a more family friendly, more sort of balanced life, de facto mode, or is it always going to be sort of more about who just wants to make swimming their whole life?
That's a tough one. I think it's tough. I know on my team, that's one of the goals we've set for our program, is that we want to make it so that our coaches can have a good work-life balance.
Yeah. And how do you do that?
We work very hard right now to talk a lot about things that, like our last staff meeting, we had a bunch of questions that I worked with them on. And I said, okay, you know, talk about one thing that you're doing well in practice. Talk about one thing that you're struggling with in practice. Talk about one thing that's going well outside of the pool. Talk about one thing you're struggling with outside of the pool. And I talked about how, you know, I'm working through some housing issues because I've just moved to the area. And so I'm still trying to figure out, you know, where I'm living. And so it's tricky. And so I'm like, there's going to be days where I've got to be late to practice because my landlord's fixing something in my apartment.
Oh, man. And
just having that conversation and letting the men on my staff have that same conversation with me. And the women on my staff having that same conversation with me, we talk about, what's your dream job? What can we do to make that dream job happen? Do you want to keep coaching? Great. Let's figure out how to make that possible. Because I think it is. And a lot of it goes back to communicating with your staff and making sure that you're involving the spouses in the process as well. We talk a lot about, okay, you know, does your husband need you home this weekend? Great. Well, then let's only schedule you for this part of the meet. And it's about coaches learning to separate their ego a little bit. And I think it's easier to do at the club level, honestly, than the college level.
Oh,
just because, we can coach as a team and as a family more than and support each other. And say, okay, you know, the big thing is the kids have to trust every coach on the staff.
Yeah.
And so we rotate who's coaching which groups. We rotate who they're talking to. We make sure that there's at least two coaches at each level of the program that the kids know that they can turn to as a coach that they need to listen to and respect and trust. And that takes practice. We're still not very good at it, but we're working on it. We're evaluating how we structure our program so that we can. I think NC State does that really well. I know that comes up on talks all the time. But they rotate holiday weekends or weeks so that their coaches can be gone for an entire week with their families. And the kids know that the coaches that are on deck all care about them.
Yeah.
And that's the big piece. I mean, if our focus in this job is to take care of the kids, we need to figure out how to do that. But at the same time, if we want to take care of the coaches, we just got to make sure that the kids have a bunch of coaches they can rely on. And that just gives them more tools. And it helps the kids feel like more of a community. And it's not a negative, but it does require pocketing your ego as a coach.
Yeah.
Which is the hard part, I think.
Yeah. And I think as you describe it, it sounds too like, I mean, this is sports, right? This is competition. And of course you want your coaches to be competitive with one another, right? To do well. But I think a trap that often I know I fell into in my coaching career was I was so competitive with the people I was coaching with that it wasn't like we're competing, but we're on the same team. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
I need to prove I'm better than you. And then it was a zero sum game in terms of me ever, you know, taking time off or trusting somebody else or doing any of the things you just described.
And that's really tough. And I think it's hard for everybody. I mean, I want to be a successful coach, but you have to define what that success really means. And I think part of the appeal of club coaching is that that description of success can be far broader because I don't have to answer to an athletic administration.
Yeah.
Like my just definition of success can be, I want my kids to love this team so much that when they leave, they want to come back for college. You know, I want kids to love this program and their teammates so that they have friendships for the rest of their lives. I want these kids to learn time management and discipline and how working together makes us faster rather than trying to beat each other like you're just describing. And I want my kids to understand the importance of just being good people and going on and being doctors, lawyers, teachers, nurses that go out and help the community get better. And if I'm doing that, that can be my definition of success. And if I do those things, my kids are going to swim fast. And that's the cool part. Because they want to do it for each other.
Yeah. All right, let me take you in a different direction. Because I want to ask you something that's sort of like a topic that people don't really like to talk about. It's a little bit of like a taboo topic. And... Mm-hmm. But I think it's worth discussing. There's some sort of unofficial quota, you could say, in college swimming, where if you have a combined swimming program, you know, it's assumed that there must be at least one woman on staff, and if you're a women's only program, there must be a woman coaching there. And I think that, of course, nobody says this out loud because that would be saying you have a discriminatory policy. But this is something that I've had whispered to me 20, 30 times, right? You don't say anything, but you know, this is this position, we're only looking for a woman or whatever.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Well, I've definitely been the benefit. I've definitely benefited from that policy. So there's some level of hypocrisy on that level. That being said, I think I'm a pretty good coach. So I think I do a good job, or at least as good as any male they would have hired in that similar position, and had a pretty decent resume coming in, so that I feel like helped me. But I understand that I was definitely hired under that umbrella policy, unwritten, unspoken policy.
We just spoke it.
Which you know, so I get it, and it definitely benefited my career, for sure. I got to work with great coaches at NC State. I got to work with great athletes there. I got to have that advantage. I think there is some absolute benefit to having a female coach on your staff, whether you are a combined program or a women's only program. I think there is, if you have the opportunity to do that, you should, because they, at least the women, the female coaches that I've worked with that I respect, or at least speaking towards myself, I definitely feel like even my male swimmers are able to relate to me in a different way than maybe they would with a young male swimmer or my male coach. I don't know. And that just may be me personally, because I'm much more relaxed and really, really liberal, but that's part of it. I just don't have like a filter in terms of I like or don't like somebody. That never really occurs to me. I think that being said, there's two layers to this. I think that there are, I think there are definitely men's coaches that are put in positions that they're not ready for either, that they don't consider females for.
For sure.
Who are ready for that. I also think that there are ways that we could do a better job of promoting females into that. Like, I think sitting down and talking with them about, do you want to coach? Are you interested in a graduate assistant position? I mean, if you go and you look at GA positions, how many of those across the country are filled by females?
Right.
There are not many.
No.
And I know at NC State, when I was there, we had, I think, 3 during my 5 years there.
Yeah.
And none of them went on to coach, which wow. I feel bad about. And I don't have a ton of women that I have maybe, I think I've had maybe three swimmers that I've coached in 23. Let me think for a second. I'm trying to think of how many swimmers I've coached that have gone on to coaching that are female. And there's probably maybe 5.
Okay.
And I think sometimes it's just, you know, that we've got to make sure we're offering that opportunity out. And I could absolutely do a better job at that. I don't necessarily do as good of a job on that as I probably could or should. I think that's part of the problem too. I think sometimes female coaches we're harder on female underlings than we are on male underlings. You know, I think that's also something that's true. And then, and I'm going all over the place on this one, trying to like be PC, and I probably should just let that go. But yeah.
I'll go non PC, and then maybe it'll.
Yeah, and then I'll feel more comfortable. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but
the people that know me know that okay. So I really think that you should always hire the best coach for the job.
Yeah.
And I think that's regardless of whether or not they're male or female. And I think it's regardless of whether or not there's a male position. There's been plenty of male positions that have opened up that they don't even consider a female for because yeah. they've been historically male. And there are plenty of good female coaches that are out there applying for those jobs and they don't even look at them. And you can't tell me that they do. Yeah. In that same respect, when a female position opens up, look at a dude. Like if there is a good coach out there that wants a job, that has the recruiting connections, that has the club coaching. And there was something posted online about how club coaches are having difficulty making the jump to high school or to college. And I think there's some validity to that. But
that was me as well.
Yeah, and that's true. You know, I mean, that's true. Yeah. I think that there's some element to that. There was some woman that posted, you know, that's it's truism. And but at the same time, what makes a good coach? Is it their recruiting ability? Is it their coaching ability? What are you looking for in that position? And hire a person for that position. Define responsibilities, define tasks, and hold to them. You know, if you want somebody that's going to come in and do all your travel planning and your management, and you call that your quote unquote female job, that's fine. But look at a guy that might be really good at doing that as well. Because I know plenty of guys that are amazing at doing planning.
Yeah.
And doing travel planning and doing those kind of things. It doesn't need to just be a female job. Let your females coach. They might be good.
I find myself nodding and agreeing with a lot of the stuff you're saying. I just think this whole unofficial quota thing, like, I'll know we're doing a lot better when nobody has to gossip about it. Because, mm-hmm. I had a time where I was a head coach and I was doing hiring, and I didn't have a lot of trouble finding really well qualified women to apply for the jobs that I had. I had a coaching staff that was over half women when I was head coach, and I kind of saw it as an opportunity because some of these coaches were really getting overlooked. And because I looked a little bit harder, I was able to find really, really good coaches that other people weren't trying to hire. I mean, I think that, I think what could really turn the corner in this respect is some of these guys, and I'm really talking about the guys, because it's mostly guys in head coaching positions making, these hiring positions, sort of starting to get a little deeper with their hiring process, do a little bit of recruiting, just like they do with athletes, and find out where the opportunities are out there and build a staff. You know, don't be forced by a quota. Build a staff. I look at like Kelly Kramer, at Minnesota. He just poached. I say poached, but he just hired Alicia Hicken Franklin.
I know. Away I saw from that's Denver. A good hire. She's
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah, and that's so. Like, there should be a lot more of those. Like, that's if you're smart, Kelly Kramer. I just said you're smart. You.
I'll tell him today at the meet.
Oh, he's there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell him I thought that was very smart that he did that. So, and I think that there are a lot more opportunities like that sitting.
Absolutely.
Right there. Yeah.
Absolutely. I would agree. I think that, you know, looking for the best coach is what you need to do. I know that's how I approach coaches, looking for coaches that way. I mean, whenever we're looking for a new position, I kind of make some calls, you know, I'm like, hey, you know, I know you're out there. I know you're looking, is this something you'd be interested in? You know, there's a lot of female coaches out there that, kind of go under the radar a little, I think. Because I went to a talk at ASCA a couple years ago with Bill Sweetnam, and he said that for people to be successful, you need to put your best coaches in your best facilities with your best kids. And I think sometimes women settle for average facilities and average kids. Not that our kids are average. Every single kid is a special butterfly, but there is some truth to that. You know, are you getting the top kids? I mean, you'll see kids, female coaches work with kids that maybe nobody even saw potential in and get them from state qualifiers to junior national qualifiers.
Yep.
That maybe that wouldn't even been something that kid in another program would have seen the opportunity to become. And so I think that there's a severe spot where you've got female coaches that maybe aren't in the best coaching situations, and they're making amazing things happen. And that being said, I also think part of the reason why you have some female coaches that don't go into college coaching is the pay is brutal.
It is brutal.
And you can make more being the head coach of a small team and teach like 2 days worth of swim lessons and make more money. Yeah. Sorry, college coaches, like, yeah. Especially at those lower levels.
Yeah.
You've got to really want to not, like, in your mid-20s, you've got to be okay not making a ton of money.
Yeah.
And that's a hard pill to swallow sometimes, especially if you are someone who wants to start a family or wants to, you know, do those things. I mean, I made the move from NC State and North Carolina, where swimming's obviously a huge sport, to move to Colorado. And it was driven by my relationship at the time.
Yeah.
And that was a choice I made. And that had nothing to do with the sport or the climate or the pay. It just had to do with my boyfriend at the time had a better gig. And so we made a choice as a couple that was where we were going to move. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
You know, lawyers make more than coaches. Little known fact.
I've heard that.
And so you make that move, and it's okay. And it's not, it doesn't make me any less of a coach for doing that. It just means I made a choice.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think a lot more female coaches make that choice than male coaches do. I think you are in a different situation, Chris, and I applaud you for that. That's all.
I was raised to be a feminist. First and foremost, so that's not a mistake that I ended up with the kind of wife that I got.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Nico, you've been quiet. I'm wondering if you've got questions that you want to get in here that and Alexis and I have just been dominating the conversation.
No, I mean, the goal was to get her to talk, right? So I was just listening, and then, like, I wrote you guys in preparing this, you know, I'm kind of overwhelmed by all this because I'm like, especially when I start like researching it a little bit, so we could get a little bit of stuff together that we may want to talk about. I'm like, this really seems to be a big problem. I never saw it like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of male coaches actually feel that way. Like when I sat down with my staff and I said, we went to senior nationals and I was there with one of my directors, and I say, because we have three directors that sit underneath my position, and I was with one of my directors, and I said, okay, count the female coaches on the pool deck right now. There were 10. And I said, okay, out of those 10, How many are head coaches? There were five. That's where our issue is. You know, you talk about wanting to have female coaches on national teams and representing on national programs. There's five of us. We all know each other because we hang out in the bathroom together and play the really cool games. But
I've heard that.
It's really fun. But there just isn't numbers to fill the staff that you're talking about. You know, there aren't female coaches with kids at that level. Yeah. And it's not that, and I can't speak to anybody but myself. I've made the choice, and I feel that I am a better senior coach than an age group coach. And I have made the choice to continue senior coaching. And I think I'm doing pretty well. My kids are going to make me look really good. So that helps. You know, they work really hard and they do a lot of the work, and I'm pretty good at being nice to them most of the time. So That's always a plus. But not every coach necessarily has that opportunity to do that, you know? And I think sometimes women just choose to be age group coaches. And that's okay. They're really, really good. My sister is the best 10 and under coach in the entire world, I think. I'm biased. She's my sister. But she decided that she wanted to go and be an accountant instead because it made more money and the hours were more stable, and that's what she wanted.
Yeah.
She didn't want to give up her weekends to go coach. And there's the bummer for the swimming community. And I mean, she can teach breaststroke kick better than any human known to mankind. And if you can get her on your staff, you win. But you can't afford her anymore. So good luck.
is there something, you know, when I was like coming up with like questions that we could talk about or some stuff that we should maybe talk about, I was like, well, is it that the men are pushing the women out, or do they choose to get out? Because looking at it, you know, from my perspective, where I don't feel I have the issue of like, I look at us as coaches. I don't look at us as male coaches or female coaches. I'm like, most of the female coaches I know or I have crossed paths with, they choose to get out. I don't feel like they were pushed out. And on why is it that female coaches do choose that and male coaches don't do, or do they have to and we don't? So that's where I'm like.
That's an interesting question. I mean, I think that, I think it sort of depends on the individual. I know quite a number of female coaches that really enjoy the push and enjoy the hours and the struggle and learning how to balance that. And I'm getting better at it. I still am not great at it, but getting better at balancing the hours and balancing, you know, being able to be someone that I feel comfortable representing. I think the women that I know that have gotten out of coaching generally have done it because they feel like they can't get a good work-life balance. And I think the men that have stayed with it either have extraordinarily supportive spouses who get it and are enthusiastic about what they do and understand the level of commitment that it requires to be a coach, or they're not with anybody. You know, and they made the choice that they're not going to be with somebody. And I think that that's, maybe it's because female coaches don't want to make that choice to not be with anybody. I don't know. I know that for me personally, it's hard to have a social life and do this job. But I'm getting better at it slowly, very slowly. And I think that women just choose that they don't want to make that decision. And I do think it's partially spousal as well. I do think you need, like, you look at a basketball coach, how many times when you watch a college basketball coach that they show a picture of their wife in the stands cheering and is excited. But how many times do you see a swim coach's wife in the stands?
Right.
You don't, because a swim coach's wife doesn't want to sit at a pool for 6.5 hours. Neither does a swim coach's husband. You know, like, that's not a fun thing to go do. And that goes back to kind of the root of our sport and what makes our sport marketable and what makes our sport, you know, something that people want to watch, you know? And I think that that's one of those things that I think we've got to work on too. But I do know that when I was married, because I'm no longer married, but when I was married and my husband would come and watch high school, watch the state meet or watch sectionals or whatever. He was like, wow, this is really incredible. And then I talked with my parents, and my parents were up there talking about how great and how thankful they were that I was their kid's coach. And they were being honest. They weren't trying to like snow my husband or anything like that. And they got to know him and brought him into the fold and made it a community thing, and it made it better. And I think that that helps, and that's important. And I think the more we can, as coaches, have your spouse come to, like, if you coach at world championship trials, bring your spouse one day, have them come. Have them come see what you do. Have them come and see how amazing what you do is and be proud of it. And I think, I mean, Chris, how many times did your wife come to swim meet?
Yeah, she, you know, well, she came to a lot of swim meets when we lived in the U.S. And she actually found people to come with her to the meets. And that was really, really nice. And I actually could feel the difference between when she had seen me at work very recently and when it had been a long time. And you know, we started to have a conversation about it, that it was an important part of our relationship, that we both sort of saw each other at work, because you can tend to start to disassociate and start, you know, like making up stuff in your mind. Like, they're just over there and they're hanging out and like, you know, ignoring me. And
well, it's true. Like, yeah. I went and I watched my ex-husband at court, and I went and I, you know, participated in his work activities and stuff like that. Probably not as much as I should have, but like, that's important. And I think that that's something as coaches we forget about big time, because a 6-hour prelim session is pretty awful. But
yeah. Well, that's a whole nother podcast where we have to talk about making our sport,
right?
Making our sport watchable.
But a 2.5-hour final session is really exciting. And encouraging your spouse to be a part of that, or even like those 10 and under inter squad meets that we host as club swimmers. Like, that's pretty fun. Parents are pretty into it, and it's pretty cool. You know, so that's marriage advice, I guess, from somebody who screwed it up once. So I guess do that. And when you're gone for 4 weeks at a time, make sure you talk to your spouse every day and communicate with them and send them for pedicures, or, you know, make sure that they have, you know, ski pass for the weekend, whatever you need to do to make sure that they know you still care and you're not just forgetting about them.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's huge. And I think that, you know, on the female side of things, you've got to have a supportive spouse. You do. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And my spouse was phenomenal. He really loved, he only knew me as a coach. So, you know, it was like, here's what you got. Yeah. I don't know what else to tell you. Yeah. Recruiting season has begun. I will see you in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I mean, and it's learning how to do that. And when you're the boss, recognizing that you need to support your staff and teach your staff how to do that, because they'll forget, because they're going to work their ass off for you.
That's
something that you've got to help them remember to take time off and help them remember to do the little things. Like the meet I'm currently at, I love the kids that are here and I'm very excited to be here. And, you know, but I'm missing kids back home and still communicating with them at home, communicating with my coaches back home and talking with them. And making sure that the coaches that are going to meets, that we're supporting them as well. You know, they're going to be at a meet for 14 hours on Saturday, and I got to make sure that we're taking care of them, you know, and they get Monday morning off when I get back in town or whatever. So,
yeah.
And as the boss, that's your job to set the tone for that. And I think sometimes your employees are going to work as hard as, are going to try to work as hard as you do. And you don't want to have them feel like you're letting them down. They're letting you down. Because they're not there, you know, and you talk about like the ego side of it. And I think there's also some level of, they care a lot about your program. If you're doing a good job, your assistants and your staff, they care about it too. And they're going to want to work as hard as you can. And you got to make sure that you're setting a good example too. Again, something I don't do very well, but I'm working on it.
Well, I appreciate you. I mean, you know, we really got deep into this topic, and I, among all those other things you said you're doing this weekend, I appreciate you making some time to come talk to us and tell us what you're thinking about and what your opinions are on all of these topics, because I think it's I think it's going to be a really great conversation starter for some other people who are wondering what it is they can do, you know, in their situation.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the biggest takeaway would be is if you're a male coach, look around the deck, talk to the female coaches. They're not going to come up and talk to you.
Yeah.
Just come up and talk to them and ask them how they're doing.
Yeah.
And they'll talk to you. And female coaches, just don't be afraid to go and say hi and talk to the coach that's sitting next to you, regardless of the gender, and ask them how they're doing, what they're doing with their season, how they feel about their season.
Yeah.
And you'll find that everybody generally feels the same way. You're nervous. The kids that have come to practice are swimming well. The kids that didn't come to practice aren't swimming well, and they're upset because they're not swimming well. And you just move on. Everybody has the same thing. We're all in the same sport. We're all in this together to make it better for the kids so that they have a good time and that they love this sport.
Yeah.
Period.
All right. I think that's a great place to finish. Thank you so much, Alexis. Thank you, Nico.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Nico.
Thank you.
Thanks so much to Alexis for coming on and going toe-to-toe on some really tough issues. Thanks also to Nico Messer, as always. Thank you to everyone for listening. For more great swimming conversations, go to chrisdcoach.com. That's C-H-R-I-S-D as in DeSantis, coach.com. You can also find me at Chris DeSantis Coaching on Facebook. Write me a message. Give some feedback. You can also make an account at proswimworkouts.com. That's proswimworkouts.com, all in one word. And get access to the database of top-notch swimming practices. Remember to use the coupon code CRDeSantis, all in caps, when registering for a premium subscription for 20% off. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.